It's December 31st, New Year's Eve 2014, and we'd like to welcome you to a very special edition of Bite Marks Cafe, of course, where we serve you the first bite of today's technology. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa, and we are your geeks in residence for the next hour, and it will be a very special hour as we skip the news and get right into a look back at the year that was and look ahead to 2015.
And it's a year-end talk story session with a focus on tech and science, and we'd love to hear from you as well. And of course, if you're listening on this New Year's Eve, of course, you know, we're kind of warming you up to the heavy
before
drinking.
Before the sashimi drinking. Sake, sake.
Okay. Now's your time to give us a call and have us give you the chance to tell us your story.
Absolutely. So if you want to share your best moment of the year, you want to predict a tech trend for 2015, or just tell us about a project that you're working on that will come to fruition next year, you can give us a call.
And of course, if you haven't already memorized this, the phone lines are open for you to give us a call. The number is 941-3689 on Oahu, or 877-941-3689 on the neighbor islands. And, of course, we'll be checking Twitter for your comments as well and for replies to at Bite Marks or at Hawaii.
To get the conversation going, though, we have invited a couple of wonderful guests who are joining us here on this wonderful holiday. Senator Glenn Wakai, Chair of the Economic Development and Technology Committee, and Brian Dote, Chief Innovation Officer at Mid-Pacific Institute. Glenn and Brian, welcome to Bite Marks Cafe.
I wouldn't want to be anyplace else on the last day of the new year than right here.
Now, I'm not going to say, you know, why you guys don't have some big party to go to, but are instead here with us, which I'm
they're
very
a big
great.
Get.
Ryan
big
told get. Me this was the big party.
It absolutely is.
I'm very, very grateful. This is kind of like the pre-party warm-up. So people listening, you know, after they hear the show today, they're going to just want to get liquored up.
It sounds a little bit, Bert, like you might have started on the sake already.
Yes, I started this afternoon.
But this is our retrospective year-end show. We have had a couple of all call-in shows, and they've been a lot of fun to sort of let other people set the agenda and get the conversation going. But to get things started, we have very smart people here in the room with us. Senator Wakai, if we can start with you, I mean, 2014 was certainly a big year, I would say, in Hawaii politics. But from a tech and science angle, is there anything that stands out to you as a high point?
I think it's great that we have a geek in Washington Place. I mean, it was great that Hawaii, take the politics aside of how he got there. I think it's wonderful that Governor Ige is in a position to really help drive an agenda he started back in the Senate. You may recall how the Senate was a leader in the legislature in going paperless, and that was driven by him. And on a lot of other technical fronts, he has led the way. So it's actually great for the technology community to have him in power to really reinvent the way government operates, the way we deliver services, and perhaps most importantly, the way we create jobs for our future generations.
He worked at a startup, a data center. He's an engineering graduate from UH. Bert, of course, you've worked with him.
You know, there was a data center called Pihana, which there were some pretty good people involved with that, and Equinix came in and purchased them, and you know, they had plans to really kind of expand across the Asia-Pacific region. So, you know, it was a time when I think the whole internet infrastructure was just booming. But it was, you know, like any startup. I mean, you know, there's some risks involved. And they ultimately, I think, broke apart. And what is remaining in Hawaii is what we know now as DR Fortress. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's sort of an indication of sort of the longevity of that business. I mean, it's still a very viable business. And I think, you know, in terms of data centers, I mean, Hawaii still needs to have more of these kinds of infrastructure since, you know, I think the internet is obviously not going
to
go away.
I think it's fair to say that geeks might be in the ascendancy. I mean, we have also as the head of the University of Hawaii, the entire UH system, David Lassner, who up until this year was the chief information officer, who was the VP of information technology, definitely someone who talks infrastructure and broadband and all of those things. And, you know, someone that I think hopefully will be good for the university, but bring that kind of technical background to a larger system as well. Do you agree?
I agree. I mean, the geeks are taking over Hawaii, and it's about time. I mean, you look at the maturation of the technology industry and culture here in Hawaii, it's finally getting to what I see as kind of the adolescent time period. And it's not quite there because we haven't had kind of a private sector organization or go-to ambassador to be the face and the force for technology. It's been kind of sporadic talk and mm-hmm. fires that have been lit in various corners of the technology community. But I think that with Governor Ige, where he is today, maybe that's the face that you need to really push technology so that it's talked about in the same arenas as construction, tourism, and military in Hawaii. So I think there's great possibilities and a lot of optimism for anyone who is associated with technology.
Yeah. Now, Brian, you're a chief innovation officer as well at Mid-Pacific Institute. I think this is also your first year.
Yeah,
you started this year. From your perspective, are geeks taking over the world? Are you another member of that organization to bring the geeks mindset to a larger organization?
I think us geeks, we've been slowly taking over the world for a long time.
Well, we don't want to worry our listeners.
Sorry.
We're benevolent.
We've been building the infrastructure and designing the products and the applications that make all of this possible. And we've been doing it for a long, long time. So I see innovation as sort of like the adolescent period. We are emerging and coming more mainstream, but we were sort of always there and always providing these things that we need.
Now, Brian, you've been involved with the tech industry for quite a while. I mean, I know you have some history with Apple and some of the startup communities here. When the innovation officer opportunity came up at Mid-Pacific Institute, was that something that you saw as being not only beneficial for your career, but something that would impact the youth in Hawaii? I mean, what really drove you to become the...
It sounds like a day job. Why would you go from startup to day job?
So when I started Topeki, as you all know, in 2011, I told myself I am never going to work a day job again. And I told myself that I didn't want to sort of be quote unquote in corporate America anymore. Mm-hmm, and so mm-hmm. I was glad to go independent, mm-hmm, work in the projects mm-hmm. that I felt were worthy. And I loved that. And then one day a job comes up that sort of has the perfect job description of all the things that I enjoy, almost as if I had written it myself, but I didn't. And when that came across the table, I was just, this is the perfect job for me. It's the combination of two spheres that I enjoy. It's technology and education, and it's the intersection of the two. And where those two things intersect, I think I see powerful possibilities, and I want to be right there.
Do you see things that have happened in 2014 that lead you to believe that there's going to be more emphasis, let's say, in education on the topics of STEM and getting kids more engaged in science and technology? I mean, we've sort of covered this topic for years now, but I think there needs to be like a emphasis on it, a more sort of focused emphasis. Mm-hmm, and do you mm-hmm. see that happening in education, at least in the arena that you're
doing? So in our world, that's happening, and it's happening happening slowly, because there's a lot of people you need to carry along for that
mm-hmm.
ride.
Right,
and
right.
So one thing that I like to talk about a lot is it's more than just getting the technology into the hands of the students. You need to provide engaging experiences and actual curriculum to support that learning. And so that's one of the challenges I see is it's easy to go out and buy an iPad and put it in a student's lap. It's hard to take that into a learning experience that's meaningful and that meets all your curricular goals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the challenge is. And that sort of what I call sort of the 3D printing world. Everyone wants a 3D printer, and you plop one down in your living room or your classroom, and now what? Mm-hmm. Like, what does that really do for the student other than we download a few sample files and we've printed a few things? The learning that comes after that is going to be the interesting part, and I think that's the biggest challenge ahead.
Sounds good. We've got some callers lined up, and of course, if you've got a story to tell us about 2014 or perhaps even a prediction for 2015, the number to call is 941-3689, or from the neighbor islands at 877-941-3689. Now, I know drones has been kind of a big thing for the last couple of years, but I want to welcome Ted Ralston from Waimanalo to Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bert.
Hey, welcome back, Ted.
So,
drones have certainly been in the news, and while President Obama was in town, there was a TFR, a temporary flight restriction, saying that you should not be flying your new Christmas present around, and probably not around Kailua Bay. But I certainly saw some videos in the last week. What do you see as sort of this collision coming between consumer interest and, of course, the safety and regulatory interest regulating these aircraft?
Bert, I think the whole issue here is we've really got to do a better job of socializing what this functionality is all about. And Hawaii is a great place to start because we can focus on that from a many points of view. The benefits of UAVs can give us a lot of information, a lot of discovery that's useful for many aspects of life here to improve the human condition, to improve the environment, to understand better the forces that are coming at us as sea level rise and global warming takes place and invasive species and such. All these things are addressable better in many cases by UAVs than they are by current systems because of distance, because of cost, because of access. And so there's a functionality here that we don't have in our current experience. That's what UAVs bring to the picture, really as an ecosystem of their own.
Well,
unfortunately, go ahead.
No, Ted, you know, the line is kind of noisy, and I know you've got a lot to say, and I want to also let everybody know that, Ted, you're going to be on the show next week, and we can get much more in-depth about drones.
We'll this thing from soup to nuts next week, Bert.
Yeah, so thanks for giving us a call, and we'll definitely look forward to chatting with you more so about the drones in, you know, in sort of 2015 and what to expect because, you know, everybody's got them.
Yep. Thank you very much, Ted.
Now, I know, Brian, you got something for Christmas, and were you able to fly it, or did you obey the no-fly zone?
As a school, we received our first drone actually a few months ago, mm-hmm. and I have a sort of a funny story. On one of the early flights, we had the drone try to return home, and the drone started running out of battery. And so fortunately, Mid-Pacific is in a beautiful place without big bodies of water.
Mm-hmm.
And our drone ended up landing on the roof of one of the buildings because that's the best it could do to return home.
Mm-hmm.
But there's definitely a learning curve there. And it's not as easy as an RC car where you're just dealing with, you know,
right,
forward and reverse.
Yeah, right.
Now, drones are a little more difficult.
Now, Senator Wakai, last year there was a lot of conversation about a bill that was looking to restrict usage of these unmanned aerial vehicles, except in the case of use by law enforcement. But, of course, you also have federal oversight, which is actually usually preeminent. For the upcoming legislative session, do you see there's a place for state regulation or state guidance as far as these things, or is it really in the hands of the FAA?
I am one of those who believes in the handoff approach, but with regard to drones, there are mischievous folks out there that will use it for not positive means. I mean, we don't want these drones going and buzzing by your house in Mililani and looking at what you're opening up on Christmas Day. I think that's intrusive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in the realm of possibility of happening there. So I think there's a need for some level of regulation. I think, introduced three bills last year regarding drones and how to regulate them. At the end of the session, we couldn't figure out exactly where the right place was, and we're going to come back and revisit those issues. But as we have discussed today, it's so cutting edge, but as many kids unwrapped their presents, so many of them got remote control drones. So it's becoming mainstream quicker than legislators can act.
Right.
But I can assure you that something will come out this year, not to restrict its vast usage, but to make sure that our individual privacy is taken into account as these things fly all over the place.
That's
truly. I mean, 2014 definitely was a year where I think the amateur drone models became extremely popular, and I think this Christmas season
was the number one.
A lot of presents being given away. 2015 will probably continue along those same lines. So it'll be interesting to see how the regulation and of course the issue with privacy.
So next week, our drone show. Tune in for that for sure.
It's funny how Santa Claus is pushing the legislative agenda, huh?
That's what technology is going to do. I tell you, it's moving very quickly. We want to welcome Andrew from Kaneohe to Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, Happy New Year, guys.
Thank you.
Well, I got some fun future technology stuff. I got a buddy in D.C. who works for a security technology division, and his company has been being kind of talked to about one of the items that they work on, which is a retinal scan security system using high-def cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the phone companies that seem to be asking about it as possible security unlock features for future phones coming up in possibly the next year or two.
Wow. So what you're describing is something that would be on commercial smartphones that would do
exactly
a retinal scan?
using the quality of the high def cameras that are now appearing on these phones, they're meeting up with the minimum requirements for retinal scanning, using camera. And my two things are, first of all, I've talked with my buddy a lot, and it's a very cool feature. The concerns that are being raised are the active quality of the camera, where it will be basically searching actively for retinal scans, even when you're not having the phone
pointed
in
correctly.
Use.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm, okay.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious if anything has come through in your all's circles of information in regard to that, or if it's totally a newer thing that hopefully won't happen too fast. Well, and I actually have a pretty bad connection, so I'll hop off and listen.
No, thank you very much for your call. And I would say you're very timely. I mean, certainly security, we did just talk about privacy. Mm-hmm. That's another big theme of 2014. Poor Sony probably is one of the people that's feeling this quite a bit. I would say that, like, fingerprint things, Touch ID on both the Apple side and Samsung's equivalent, I mean, more and more people are paying attention to multi-factor authentication and security. Now, Brian, you're a geek. You've built apps. I mean, what do you think about a retinal scan, a passive retinal scanner running on your beautiful iPhone 6 Plus there?
it worries me a little bit only from a consumer perspective. And I want to say about 5 years ago, I worked in an office with a biometric finger mm-hmm, scanner. Mm-hmm. And if there's any weather conditions or anything on your hand, the scanner didn't work. Mm-hmm. And so I'm worried that there'll be a phase for this product by which it's very inconvenient to use, and that'll cause adoption to probably be slower. But if they can get the scanning to be as simple as Touch ID, where it's very passive and very easy to set up, I see it as a viable alternative. But, you know, not knowing anything about the technology, don't your retinas change over time?
That's actually, I mean, it sounds like we would maybe look for having a conversation about this on a show.
Very interesting. Yeah.
And I wouldn't imagine that this technology might be at least a couple of years out. Mm-hmm. So, you mm-hmm. know, it'd probably be good to. But I think, you know, for more advanced, let's say, systems, there is already retinal scans that are being done, you know, to enter into a secure building or something like that.
Yeah,
so,
but consumer level.
Yeah, right,
the
consumer
else.
Level, that would be interesting.
And that's where these technologies falter. Is going from the high-end secure building to the consumer model, you know, on 160 million iPhones, you know, what happens then?
Right. And, of course, how does it impact the performance of the device? Is it going to take, mm-hmm. you know, battery power and, you know, it's going to be constantly on, what have you? Well, that's a great, great call, Andrew, and we appreciate that. And I want to quickly welcome Cecil from Kailua Kona to Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome to the show.
Hey, aloha. Happy New Year to you guys.
Happy New Year.
I just had a couple of things.
Sure.
In 2014, I did an RC project ourselves here in Kailua Kona, where we were playing with what's called FPV, first-person view, small cameras, flying quads, and cars on the ground and stuff. And that led us to a machine called the Quadralite, which is a manned flight vehicle. And actually, it's like one of the quads, one of the what's been called a drone, except it's big enough for a person to fly in. We're currently doing an Indiegogo campaign at, you know, Indiegogo.com. I just searched for Quadralite. But the thing I wanted to talk for just a moment about was an alternate energy source we came up with. I work for a small think tank, and Senator McKay, if you could get this information, I think you'd find it very interesting. Governor Ige had responded, you know, during the campaign. It's called dark solar, and what it amounts to is the sun is the alternate energy source, but it is not just photovoltaic energy. We're actually collecting energy 24/7. The sun is providing the solar wind, which ionizes the atmosphere. It actually charges the atmosphere. In 1984, I think it was, after the oil embargo, the U.S. government did a project where they put a balloon up to 550 meters on Muroc Island, I think. It's off the east coast of the U.S. And at that altitude, that'd be about 1,800 feet or so, there was a difference of 120,000 volts between ground earth and the air, just the air. Now, trying to hold something up at that altitude is ridiculous. it's not going to happen. But we came up with a system that can go up, say, to the top of one of these hills or mountains here in the islands, and at an altitude of, say, 1,000 meters, say 4,000 feet, you put up some towers. They stick up in the air about 200 feet, and you suspend collection surfaces, which are just collection surfaces. Mm. Graphene and different things are being experimented with, but the bottom line is this, and this is the God's truth, guys. Listen to this. We can generate in excess of 100 megawatts of energy without a single moving part.
That sounds very
cool. Is that
something
that you are looking at piloting and doing a demonstration on?
We could do that in a heartbeat. A guy named Richard Stancliffe, which is on Oahu, is the project coordinator there that the senator should get in touch with. I mean, I can, if you'll give me an address or whatever.
Well, Cecil, I think you sent both of us some information about your Indiegogo project. So why don't you go ahead and send us some information about this dark solar energy, and we'd definitely like to take a look at it and pass it on.
Oh, dynamite, guys. You just made my day, because I'm, if I may be blunt, I'm very good at being an inventor, because, you know, I have a real good imagination, and I'm a child. I have no discipline. So I make a good inventor, but when it comes to politics, I'm politically incorrect most of the time.
So well, Senator, do you want to say something?
I am too, Cecil, but I like your idea.
You know, I noticed that.
That was good.
I'm not sure what that means.
I appreciate the really novel idea and approach, and we all talk about needing firm power. This seems to resolve some of the issues when the sun goes down with our approach to solar.
Oh, no, you don't understand. This concept was patented in 1901 by a guy named Nikola Tesla.
Oh, Tesla.
Uh-huh. He was just 100 years ahead of his time, and the people who were in charge at that time wanted to, they did not want this solution. They had oil and copper mines. They wanted other things to go.
Right.
So, I mean, that's what turned me on. I thought, is that guy a nut or what? And the more I researched Tesla, the more I realized, man, I can't hold this guy's, you know, I can't hold a candle to him.
Right,
he invented alternate energy, and, you know, the alternate energy, AC current and the AC motor and what our industry around the globe runs off of. It was very impressive. So the idea itself is very, very old. It's public domain. The machine that we've generated is we've done two prototypes, and it's really simple, but it definitely works. And if you will think about that for a moment, anytime you can just put that up there and collect it, you don't have to get the energy out of the ground or refine it or transport
right.
it. You just have the energy 24/7.
Well, thanks, Cecil. Send us some info, and we'll definitely kind of pass it on, and then we'll keep that conversation going.
Yeah, thank you very much, Cecil. Now, Cecil, again, did mention also his Quadralite project. You can look that up on Indiegogo. It's a crowdfunding platform, and I kind of like he might be a child, he might just be imagining things, but he basically sees these quadcopters that are popular and says, why not make one big enough to strap a human into?
Have you seen me fly one?
I think it's very intriguing. I would love to watch any one of you take a ride in that quad.
That would be
first.
A viral YouTube video. But Senator Wakai, for alternative energy, I mean, like you said, any approach that we can find in Hawaii that works, we have a big difference in elevation. It kind of reminds me of using deep seawater for power because you're tapping the difference in heat between deep ocean and the surface. But the 2014 has seen a lot of milestones in terms of alternative energy in Hawaii, and I would imagine it's going to be a priority in the next year.
Oh, yes. We had a Senate Majority Caucus meeting this past Monday, and resiliency was the overriding factor. And in that silo of resiliency, which includes food and otherwise, it was about alternative energy. And we are still planning to well-fund the energy office, provide the needed manpower as well as the resources. But we really want to, I think, in this next phase of government, try to look at the private sector to help us come up with the ideas rather than government kind of trying to think that we can engineer the future of Hawaii, but staff up government so that we serve the public well, but really have the private sector energy folks tell us what are the newest, best opportunities for us in the future.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, we cover things like the energy accelerator, and maybe, you know, Cecil has the wherewithal to bring a little startup community.
I can see them do a
startup
pitch.
Together and capital. Maybe get some funding from you know, Energy Accelerator. I mean, I would think that would be a great project to see happen in Hawaii. You know what? We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll keep the phone lines open and would love to talk to you. And that's right. You can share with us your highlights from 2014, of course, and your predictions for 2015.
If you've got a great app you found or an event that's changed your life or will in the coming year, give us a call live on the air.
And, of course, that floor is open to you on HBR2. And, of course, that number to call is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Why do so many famous artists stick to a routine?
They are using their routine as a kind of tool to get around whatever the obstacles in their life are.
I'm Adrienne Hill. How some artists find time to work without quitting their day job. Next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
This evening at 6, following Bite Marks Cafe.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Claude Poncelet, physicist and author of The Shaman Within. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about the intersection of science and shamanism.
Sunday morning at 11. Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Straub Clinic and Hospital, Infinity of Honolulu, and Gourmet Events Hawaii.
Welcome back to Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I am Ryan Ozawa. Joining us here in the studio is Senator Glenn Wakai and Mid-Pacific Institute Chief Innovation Officer Brian Dote. But hopefully also joining us is you.
And of course, so on this New Year's Eve 2014, we find ourselves with a unique opportunity to spend this time discussing anything you want to talk about. And of course, that number to call here is 941-3689. On Oahu, and of course, toll free from the neighbor islands or even from the mainland. I know somebody on the mainland is listening to us. The number is 877-941-3689, and we'll put you on the air, and the floor is yours, and you can share some stories with us. Now, you know, we have patiently waiting Ian Kitajima, and we were sort of talking a little bit about some of the tech policy that might start to get introduced in 2015. Ian, we want to welcome you to Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, good. So, Ian, I know you're one of the key people that have been, I guess, sort of a force behind some of the tech policy. And I know you and Senator Wakai have been brainstorming along with Representative Angus McKelvey. Kind of give us a sense as to what you guys are scheming here.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the... All of you, I mean, it's kind of like talking to my favorite geeks here.
Thank you.
We have so many good technology companies, and a lot of them have been funded over the years through SBIRs and other types of means. And a lot of them can grow up to become, I think, very good, you know, technology companies, you know, $10, $20, $50 million companies. And there are a few companies that are going much bigger in terms of with venture capital, but so many of the majority of our tech companies are smaller companies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think over the last few years, we've been working together with the senator and Angus and others to look at like programs like the SBIR program. That's, we have one in Hawaii that funds, that helps to do cost shares for phase ones, but also we're looking at things, a bill to actually fund phase two, phase three activities, or which are really more towards commercialization. And the other thing was to relook at the R&D tax credit that we have here in Hawaii, which is pretty unique because at some level we actually have to bring the research here to Hawaii and actually do it before we can apply for the credit. So essentially we have to bring about $5 of research to claim $1 of a credit, but we have to do that work first here in Hawaii. So, you know, so maybe the question to all of you and to Senator Wakai is, as a tech industry, as we look towards this year and with a new kind of tech geek governor, What do we have to do as a tech industry to really come together or to work together more closely with the legislature to get some of these things looked at more closely and to really support a tech industry and the growth of the tech industry?
Excellent question. Thanks, Ian.
Ian, I totally agree with the ideas that you have put forth, whether it's SBIR funding, looking at the R&D tax credit, and the whole gamut. But really, as we said from the outset of the show, it's the maturation of this industry has to come together. And way back when I first got into the legislature and started working with Ian, there was a high technology association, mm-hmm. that it turned into a council. Mm-hmm. It was Ann Chung and then Lisa Gibson. And now there's nothing out there. And we've made the HTDC kind of the de facto organization leading technology in Hawaii. And if we're going to push some of those great ideas Ian just mentioned, really the rank and file technology geek out there, or not even geek, just supporter of geek things, has to get engaged. The voice is so silent and has been silent for too long. And you look at the other industries you're competing against, construction, the hotel and hospitality industry, very well organized. They know when to come out to oppose things as well as to support things. Mm. On the technology front, it's a scattered array of people who may want to support optics, may want to support open data, may want to support the variety of little corners of technology, but I don't get the sense that there is a lot of momentum to put things together. I get the sense that there's a lot of excitement, but some industry or association has to bring all of the various disparate parties together in technology to become a force to go head-to-head with tourism, mm-hmm. agriculture, and the other industries.
Now, you know, Ian, in terms of the, let's say, R&D tax credit, are, for the most part, companies that are doing really sort of hardcore research can benefit from that kind of a tax credit. But if let's say, I come up with an idea to do a mobile app for finding the best ramen in town, you know, there's probably not a whole lot of R&D that's going to go into that. So I wouldn't necessarily be a beneficiary. I guess so what I'm asking is, can you kind of give us a sense as to the kinds of companies that would be most benefit from a tax, R&D tax credit, and what would that spell for the community, the tech community?
Right. I mean, just going back to your, you know, question about an app company. One, you know, definitely, you know, what's really amazing today is that for very little money, you know, two guys or two gals in a garage can actually build an app. But as you get into things that are beyond maybe software that includes hardware,
mm-hmm.
it's definitely a different kind of activity. And one advantage or thing that actually the federal government does is like the SBIR program.
Right, Small Business Innovation Research, right?
Yes, Small Business Innovation Research. And so there's actually every department in the federal government puts about 2.5% of their budget to actually fund small businesses to actually create new types of innovations for their agencies. And so even a small software company with, you know, two guys and a girl, whatever, in working on software could actually go after a lot of these federal dollars, mm-hmm, that are available, mm-hmm. that would build potentially the kernel of innovation or technology that could then be spun into or grow up into commercial technologies that would come back into the consumer market. So, you know, there's so much potential, I think, that the federal government is willing to put into actually reducing technical risk for small businesses. And so from the small little software company to bigger companies like Oceanet that does an array of advanced research, applied research for the federal government, Hawaii should really take advantage of that. And because Hawaii has a small business, has an SBIR Hawaii program, we have a competitive advantage. So when we compete against 1,000 other technology companies in the country for funding, when we can say to that program manager, SBIR program manager, that we have a matching fund here in Hawaii, when he's down selecting to those 5 or 10 companies he's going to fund, and we're competing against California or Massachusetts or anywhere in the U.S., and we can say, you know, we can leverage the monies that you would provide for this research with another $10,000 or $15,000 or $50,000. Mm-hmm. And all things equal, we will actually win out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's one of the things that we're very fortunate to have, is that we've kind of have a program here already that started that actually has proven very good returns, very good results. And so I think we just got to – so we're looking at how do we kind of expand that program to focus on the prototyping and commercialization phase that will help these small businesses, small high-tech companies go commercial. The hard part is some people will say, you know, well, why don't you just get a loan or get venture capital? The problem is most banks will not loan money to a high-tech company.
Mm-hmm.
And most of, I would say the majority of small high-tech companies are not venture fundable. There are a few, but, you know, there's like 1 out of 100 companies that could potentially get venture capital.
Mm-hmm.
If even that, that's a pretty generous ratio I just said there.
Right.
Probably more like 1 out of 1,000 companies are venture fundable. So mm-hmm. how do we build these tech companies into more commercial companies? So one is to use the federal government's funding to help do that, and then leverage it with Hawaii monies to help these companies get to commercial grade, to commercial markets where they can actually really be sustainable because they're bringing something of value to the marketplace. Mm-hmm.
Well, Ian, thank you very much for your call. And as you've outlined, a lot of work lies ahead. But I think with a geek in Washington Place and some geeks in the House and in the Senate, we can certainly watch some of these things. But we really appreciate your insight working with Oceanit, one of the leading R&D companies here in Honolulu, and, of course, a friend of ours. Thank you very much for your call.
Thank you, guys.
Bye, Ian.
And so, Senator Wakai, so I think that does, you know, kind of give us a sense that, you know, R&D tax credit does help companies that are probably looking the next step ahead in terms of, you know, an innovation. And I think for Hawaii, that's it's good to have a foundation of those companies kind of looking ahead. I mean, creating apps is pretty easy. I mean, Ryan and I could create an app, but that's pretty much today's technology. We really kind of are looking at ways to incentivize tomorrow's technology. But we want to continue on because we got a great bunch of callers lined up. We wanted to get them, give them a chance to tell us their story. Doc from Kaka'ako. Doc, we're ready for you. Welcome to Bite Marks Cafe.
Hey, Doc. Hey, how's it going, guys?
Yeah, so what? Well, I heard you made a big investment of sorts.
Yes, I did. But I want you to do me a favor. I want you to save me like 15 seconds at the end to mention something on UAV. I don't want to derail our conversation, but I want to save like 15 seconds. Can you do that for me?
Okay.
All right, cool. So, yeah, basically, yes, I purchased what is known as a 60-watt fusion laser along with the proper fuming equipment. And recently of late, what we've been doing a lot of is personalizing the vacuum-insulated powder-coated bottle, a.k.a. HydroFlask 5050 Hydrate. There's a bunch of different brands, Hydrate being a local brand. And I've been doing things with wood, leather, plastic, glass. You know, the customization market is really big, but also, you know, I want to get into doing some stuff with prototyping. So I've been helping out the guys from Snap Zoom prototype their next iteration, you know, by creating parts of their stuff in MDF, and then so they can take that to manufacturing. So new and exciting, and I just really fell in love with lasers. After last year, we went to Iolani, and we're goofing off in the kids' lab. And I was like, I want one of those.
Wow, I know somebody who owns a laser.
Brian?
Hey, Doc. Long time no see.
Yeah. Hey, B. How's it going, brother?
I had some questions, because as a school, we've been looking at purchasing one. And I was curious to hear your thoughts now that you've sort of lasered things. what do you think is a good learning experience for a student?
Oh, my goodness. There's so much involved. It depends on whether you want to go to the straight artistic aspect, you want to go to the cultural aspect, or you want to go from the business aspect.
Probably all three.
There you go. I was going to say, one of the things that's cool about something like laser engraving or personalization is you get to get all of the above. One of my current projects right now is I'm trying to create custom engraved plaques and hydroflasks and stuff that will incorporate a lot of the kamon or the montokoro, a.k.a. family crest for Japanese.
Ah, okay.
So some people know what there is, some people don't. So, you know, my graphic design background and my Japanese
degree would be good for something. I get to work into helping people figure out what their moan should be or help them create a new one so they can start a legacy, you know, to help people connect it. Now that we're getting so good with globalization, the one thing that's starting to lose to that is a disconnection from our traditional identities. And I think it's a cool way to be inclusive, but yet, you know, creative and artistic, and then also make a little bit of business out of it by helping people create something that they really love and is personal to their family.
That's cool.
That's fantastic. Wow. Thanks, Doc, for sharing. And we will watch
and actually,
for
you. Brian, the guy, the rep from Epilogue, which is my company, will be on the island next month. I am going to meet with him, so I'll see if he has time to stop by MPI.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be awesome.
And what, Doc, you said you wanted some 15 seconds of something?
Yeah.
UAVs.
I just want to point out to you guys, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, legislature and stuff involving the UAVs. And I have to say this. Our history has proven what happened when we make fear-based laws. We have 316.1 Americans, 2.1 million of them are incarcerated, aka 0.6% or a rounding error proof of alcohol and marijuana legislation. We don't need to make laws about fears because a couple, two, three people might do something stupid while everyone else is out there trying to be inventive or have fun, recreational, or even assistive. We really can't focus always on the fear side of things because that's just crazy. That's not saying back it up.
Sure, sure.
But let's not go left. Okay. Everyone's talking about, what about the creeps?
Well, yeah. Doc, I hope you call in on our drone show, the full show. Next week we'll be focusing on that topic.
No, and Doc, you know, your point is well taken.
Thanks for letting us know about your laser engraver. We're going to watch for some of those hydro flasks next year then.
Thanks, Doc.
Yes, look us up. Ex Aloha on everything.
Sounds
good.
That's the way to find me. Thank you, brothers.
Okay, see ya.
Thanks, Doc.
Happy New Year. Now, we want to kind of keep the momentum going. We've got a bunch of callers to really kind of welcome to Bite Marks Cafe. But before we do that, we'll take a short break and continue our conversation with both Senator Glenn Wakai and Brian Dotte.
You are listening to Bite Marks Cafe.
Do you know of HPR's Jewel Box Performance Space, the Atherton Studio? Coming to this intimate stage on Saturday, January 10th, it's 20-year-old Hawaii Island slack key prodigy, Sean Robbins. Let Sean tell you why performing at the Atherton is a special coming full circle for him. Sean Robbins, January 10th at 7:30 p.m. To reserve your seats, call 955-8821 during business hours or go to hprtickets.org.
On the next On Being, Buddhist teachers Robert Thurman and Sharon Salzberg explore a Buddhist take on a distinctly Christian teaching, love of enemies.
It's very hard to see love as a force, as a power, rather than as a weakness, but that is its reality.
I'm Krista Tippett. Please join us.
Hear Krista Tippett on Being Sunday morning at 10, right after Weekend Edition. Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Nohea Gallery and Kaiser Permanente.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa. And this week, our guests include Brian Dotte and Senator Glenn Wakai. But most importantly, it includes you as well.
Yeah, that's me and Ryan. And of course, we want to hear your thoughts about 2015. You can give us a call here, 941-3689, or from the Neighbor Islands at 877-941-3689. We want to welcome our callers because they're kind of lining up, and we want to give Kimmy a chance to tell us what's going on with her world of comedy.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, Kimmy.
Happy last day of 2014.
That's absolutely right. Thanks for spending a little time with us.
Oh, my gosh. My pleasure.
So what have you got in the works? I've been seeing a lot of activity on Facebook about an event you've got planned, and it's being done through crowdfunding.
It is, yeah. So we have the first ever Hawaii Sketch Comedy Festival happening in March, the end of March, and I'm super stoked about it because we're doing it with Story U Arts, which is the newest division of the Vision Foundation. Vision Foundation is the same foundation that does cool events like Lemonade Alley, Camp Vision,
and all that
good stuff. Yeah, so I'm, you know, been cranking actually all day on it, doing the Indiegogo campaign and just realizing how awesome it is, but also kind of how difficult it is to kind of reach out to your friends and use social media and technology to kind of reach out to everybody.
Now, you already have a venue, a date, and everything for this, so that's pretty impressive, but you're still fundraising to make it actually happen.
Yeah, we do. You know, when we when I first came back home in 2012, I wanted to make sure I continued doing what I loved. I was deep into studying improv and sketch comedy in Los Angeles. So I've been thinking about the sketch festival for a while. So when I finally decided to take it on, I thought, we're going all out. You know, it's actually been the most organized I've ever been with anything in my life, which is fantastic. I think when you have heavy hitters like the Honolulu Art Museum kind of backing you up, and also the community backing you up, but even Vision Foundation, you know, Steve Sue and the entire board backing you up, you really want to make sure you've got your stuff together. So it's been a huge learning experience, but I've been enjoying it so far.
Kimmy, how much are you trying to raise?
You know, my goal is $10,000 of the Indiegogo campaign. We just hit 2015, or a little bit over 2015, which is my personal goal. My timing is probably not the best. I'm learning about this crowdfunding thing, so if anybody is, you know, trying to start one, maybe the holidays isn't the best. But I'm also confident that what we have is really, really special. There are a ton of sketch festivals that happen across the country, but I think what's cool about ours is that we're actually focusing on empowering the creative entrepreneurs. That's how our tie-in with Vision Foundation kind of happens. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that bridge between being an artist but not really having a grasp on what it means to be a business person, you know, reminding writers, filmmakers, actors, comedians that they're entrepreneurs too, and this is a place where you can learn business tools to you know, turn your passion into career and also showcase your original work.
So it's much more than a comedy
show,
right?
It's workshops and all this.
Yeah, right.
It's a platform for artists to showcase their stuff. You know, there's so much going on. When I first moved home, I had no idea that improv comedy had existed here for over 20 years, and we have a small but rapidly growing community. So I'm stoked to have their support, and I'm stoked to be even a small part of it all.
Well, I know I liked your Indiegogo. You mentioned the golden days of Rapsway and Booga Booga, and to tie that to our modern day, you know, world of YouTube and all of that. I think that you're covering a lot of interesting stuff. So, if somebody wanted to support your Indiegogo campaign or learn more about the Sketch Comedy Festival, where should they go?
They should check out hisketchfest.com.
All right. We'll put that on our show notes. Thanks very much for sharing your big project for next year, Kimmy.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you guys for listening. And have a fantastic new year. I hope to see more of you guys in 2015.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Kimmy.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow, so that's a pretty exciting event coming up.
What I like is that, you know, it's going to be at the Doris Duke Festival. I mean, Doris Duke Theater. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find the date now, but I mean, it's already set. It's just trying to get enough funds to bring in speakers and such. But worthwhile project. And Glenn,
I just think it's so neat how technology is infiltrating itself into all aspects of life. And we were talking earlier about lasers and drones, and all right, we can all agree that that's technology. But we're talking about comedy, and one would think at first glance, like, what does comedy have to do with technology? But we just heard about how technology can be used to enhance comedy. And I work with Georgia Skinner at mm-hmm. DBED with the Creative Industries. Right. And last year, my committee was technology and the arts. And at first, I thought, like, what do these two have in common? These are just two committees that they just kind of lumped together and tossed onto me. But over the past 2 years, have really seen how the creative side of Hawaii and our community can really be enhanced by using technology. And we're looking at having a technology infiltrate into the hula realm, into all aspects of music. Mm-hmm. And so technology, as we discuss it, isn't just about lasers and telescopes and stuff. It's about who we are as a people and how we can better showcase our talents to the world and be efficient and provide a monetization of our culture and get the business aspect into our very famous and full and rich culture.
Well, you know, and there's all kinds of art forms, whether it's the hula or a painting or maybe ceramics. But, you know, when you start to collect digital archives of all that, and then start to make it available through the internet or through, you know, other digital archives. I mean, it starts to give it another life, right? It goes beyond the sort of the physical, and I think that's what a lot of artists are realizing, that it's not just one sort of sort of structural form. It once it goes into sort of the digital realm, it kind of takes on a whole nother life. And I think there's ways of monetizing that and taking advantage of that. So I think it's a great thing. Brian?
That same movement is happening in education. I think we all know what STEM is, and the new acronym now is STEAM, mm-hmm. where you're integrating mm-hmm. the arts into science, technology, engineering, and math. And so, like you said, it's really about taking physical performances or physical objects, but there's a digital side to that, and I think that's the future for sure.
Mm-hmm. Great. So we want to welcome one of our callers that have been kind of waiting patiently, Daniel from Kaimuki. Welcome to the show.
Yep, I'm here.
Thanks. So how are you doing for this New Year's Eve?
Excuse me?
How are you doing this New Year's Eve?
Oh, great. Yeah, just ready to sit down with the family and have a big feast.
Well, thanks for sharing some time with us. What are your thoughts for 2015?
I don't know if you're asking for my resolutions or what I'm anticipating. Starting up a new family. So that's kind of the main priority right now.
All right.
The reason I had called is we actually just moved into the Kamuki area. We're formerly living over in Nu'uanu. And the house that we purchased has an existing PV system. And I caught kind of the tail end of that first segment, and it sounded like you were talking about alternative energy.
Mm-hmm.
And my interest is to, with HECO, or Hawaiian Electric Company, proposing some rate hikes for the existing customers. And if alternative energy is something that we're ramping up for, then what is done maybe from the political side, or maybe what who's out there to kind of protect the consumer from rate hikes and things like that that are being implemented by Hawaiian Electric
or
solar users?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your call, Daniel. And I know Senator Wakai will have a thought on that. But, Brian, if I remember your Facebook post, you're practically running off the grid at your house, correct?
Yeah, definitely. A couple years ago, we installed 35 solar panels. And these days, with the sun being out, we're cranking out over 50 kilowatt hours a day. And so we've been enjoying living electricity free from HECO. And now we recently in 2014 got our first EV car. So
now your car is running.
So now our car is exactly. And so that dark solar is really intriguing. It's really neat to think that your home and your car are basically essentially being powered for free by the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of, I don't know if you guys remember the first time you used an iPod. I relate it to the iPod moment mm-hmm. when life changed. Pre-iPod, post-iPod, mm-hmm. you couldn't look at music the same way again. I sort of have that feeling right now with an EV, that EV and PV and solar, that sort of it's life-changing.
So the PV system that you have, is it pretty much 100% freedom from
overproduce. We overproduce by a large margin.
Ah.
Our daily consumption or our consumption average was about 20 to 27
mm-hmm.
kilowatt hours
mm-hmm.
per day, and we produce on a good day over 50.
Wow!
But we did that on purpose. We knew that EV was in our future,
uh-huh.
and
so now you have room for the car.
Exactly. We're going to fit as many panels on our tiny roof as we can.
Invested in any kind of storage?
So that's next. Next. I think that's the next phase in my sort of PV plan is to figure out ways to store and alternative ways to capture that and use it in terms of when there's an electric power outage or those other things.
Impressive. But Senator Wakai, for somebody who's worried about rate hikes and trying to get into the PV game, where can they go? What relief can they seek?
Well, I think all of us rely on the PUC, the Public Utilities Commission, to regulate where HECO goes with our rates. From what I recall, with NextEra's purchase of HECO, their long-term plan was to actually reduce by 20% the rates that we as consumers have to pay. So I don't see that there's going to be out-of-control rate hikes, but I do think that with NextEra, mm-hmm. they're more interested in industrial-level alternative energy input into their system. So this approach that we've had over the past number of years of onesie-twosies, rooftop access into reverse metering into the system, I think those days perhaps are numbered.
And they're looking for more utility-scale projects?
We're looking for big scale. So I'm telling my friends that if you're going to do PV on your house, you better do it sooner rather than later, because at a certain point, HECO is going to say, forget you, individual homeowners, we're going to create these vast solar fields or wind farms or what have you, and that's going to be the input into the system in the future.
Mm. Very interesting.
Sounds good. We want to welcome Colin. Colin's patiently been waiting, and we want to welcome you to Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome, Colin.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
So tell us, Colin, what is your prediction for 2015? What you got on the horizon there?
Well, you know, I'm hoping that 2015 is going to finally bring us some convergence between the smartphone revolution and cars.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I hope so, too.
That would be nice.
I think that we've all been kind of keeping our eyes on Apple's CarPlay and, I guess, Android Auto. And considering how differently these two industries iterate, it's right. taken a while, I think, for the automakers to get geared up for this.
Are you using a system now or waiting for that perfect model?
Well, you know, and Acura put a patch out, a software update, which in itself was pretty different, that enabled Siri Ice Free for iPhone users into certain models. And I found that to be a pretty handy addition, you know, when you're driving and stuck in traffic and you want to make a quick note or set an appointment, that those things just kind of pop into your head and when you're otherwise zoning out.
All right. Well, thank you for your thoughts. I would also agree that, you know, we're reaching finally a point where it might be more mainstream. In fact, speaking of legislation, I did talk to somebody who said they want to bring driverless car legislation back and bring it back to the legislature so that Google can do more of its testing here in Hawaii. What do you think about that, Senator?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, you mean like we're going to have Jetsons and people are going to be flying around?
Not flying around. Just driving
around. Not flying around, sorry. But driving around, sorry. I think that that's something that's part of our future, but I haven't heard of any legislation that's addressing that.
Okay, well, we'll have someone come and knock on your door. But sure. Again, thank you for your call.
Yeah, thanks, Colin. I know we're kind of running short on time, and we wanted to give Senator Wakai and Brian a couple of seconds just to kind of give us a sense of what they're looking forward to, and maybe just wish everybody some happy cheers for 2015.
I think this is a really exciting time to be in Hawaii. I think we are finally moving the needle on shifting our economy into the innovation realm. Unfortunately, we don't have Danny Noe to be the $440 million economic engine that he was as a single individual. And it's forced us to put on our thinking caps and figure out how are we going to fill that hole. And we see the various other industries with tourism is pretty much tapped out. It's always going to be our bread and butter, but it's not going to be growing in the future. Mm. After the rail is done, I don't know what the horizon is going to look like for construction. Mm-hmm. Agriculture will be there, but it's not going to drive mm-hmm. our economy. It really needs to be innovation. And as we said at the outset of the show, there's so much that is lining up properly for us to really catapult it. But it's going to really take all of us in this room and all of your listeners out there and their friends to help us move the equation and let just the rank and file citizen out there know that technology is real, it's viable, and has huge potential benefits for all of us. And if we can collectively resonate that voice in the legislature, it'll get out to the community, and then we have finally turned the page on making technology a viable pillar in our economic future.
Excellently said. That is really well said. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And for final thought, Brian?
So I'm really excited. I think 2014 was a great year of tech innovation. I think 2015 is going to be even better. I'm really excited about wearable technologies, Apple's watch coming out. But what I'm actually a little sad. I'm a little bummed. And I'm bummed because I wish I was born 50 years from now.
Right.
I wish that I could be around when these things have gone the next level
right.
and are ubiquitous and cars are flying.
Yeah. You know? I think you and I are jealous of our kids.
Totally.
Well, we'll definitely be keeping in touch with you guys and having you guys come back on and share some thoughts with us. And it's been a very interesting hour of radio and, of course, a memorable call-in edition of Bite Marks Cafe. We want to thank Senator Glenn Wakai and Brian Dote for joining us today.
Run.
All right, thank you. And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Hoy, and Bert is at Bite Marks, our engineer. Happy holidays to you, David Chong, and our executive producer is Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And, of course, we leave you with our song pick of the week. Of course, I don't know how much music you'll get to see, but this is Color Decay, and we want to wish you a very happy new year. Stay safe, and see you next year on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.